Hey, Pardon My Take listeners. You can find every episode on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music. This episode is brought to you by Body Armor Zero Sugar. The brand new zero sugar sports drink from our friends at Body Armor provides real hydration with no artificial sweeteners, flavors, or dyes. And whether you're looking to stay hydrated or recovering from a long weekend, Body Armor Zero Sugar has got you covered with great tasting flavors like fruit punch and lemon lime. Available in stores nationwide, head on over to Body Armor Store on Amazon and get yours today. This episode is brought to you by Body Armor Zero Sugar. The brand new zero sugar sports drink from our friends at Body Armor provides real hydration with no artificial sweeteners, flavors, or dyes. And whether you're looking to stay hydrated or recovering from a long weekend, Body Armor Zero Sugar has got you covered with great tasting flavors like fruit punch and lemon lime. Available in stores nationwide, head on over to Body Armor Store on Amazon and get yours today. On today's Pardon My Take, we have Hall of Famer Cal Ripken Jr. Very fun interview. I actually think Cal really liked us.
He did. He liked us a lot. In fact, when we walked out, he said to me, he was like, I thought you were going to ask me one question.
Yeah, we didn't.
And you'll have to listen.
You'll have to find out.
But he liked us.
We have the Cowboys in trouble.
I don't know why we always do that. We always have to brag that our guest liked us.
Well, because a lot of guests don't. When they do like us, we're like, hey, that guy actually liked
good
us.
Good point.
Contrary to popular belief, that guy liked us. Because a lot of times people are like, wow, Mark Wahlberg hates these guys. Mm-hmm. It's like, no, he actually liked us.
Cal loves me.
Producer Hank just walked away. So we have Hot Seat Cool Throne. We have Guys on Chicks. We have the Cowboys in Trouble. We have a lot more on a packed Pardon My Take. Whether you're searching for a home to buy or you're just obsessed with looking at homes for sale, Redfin's got you covered. Redfin updates their listings every 2 minutes so you can find the home that's just right for you. You can favorite homes, share listings with others, and even schedule tours with a local Redfin agent all in the app. When you're ready to buy, an experienced local Redfin agent can guide you through the whole process. So download the Redfin app today to get started. Okay, let's go. Welcome to Pardon My Take, presented by SeatGeek. Today is Wednesday, November 7th, and we are live from the Pardon My Take election situation room in Cleveland, Ohio.
Mm-hmm.
So we're in
swing
Cleveland.
State.
We've gotten to the swing state. We're taking this show. You thought it was going to be a regular show. We're actually just going to only talk about election results and politics.
That's right.
And who you should have voted for and whether we agree with you or not.
And here's the deal, Big Cat. We're coastal elites. We live in New York City, so we want to take this experience to get out of our bubble and go out to the Rust Belt.
Yeah.
And then talk to people in the Rust Belt and tell them how they should vote.
Yes.
Because we vote
We know what's better for you than you'd know what's for you.
I know what's better for everyone.
Yeah. And if you don't vote what I like, then fuck you, man. So check out my sticker. I voted today.
Yeah.
But I didn't because we're in Ohio.
It is one of the funniest days of the year when they start to break down on the map, like how different towns voted.
Yes.
Wolf Blitzer fucking around with
Situation room.
With the Situation Room doing telestrators. He's like accidentally drawing penises on the map.
Walking around in front of big screens and serious things are going on.
You know what I want? I want them to break it down further. I want them to show me who on the first floor of each house, which way they voted, and then the grandmother in the basement, she voted this way, and then the people upstairs on the second. I want like a more comprehensive breakdown.
So in all honesty, we're obviously not going to talk about any of that stuff, but we are in Ohio. We're at the Cleveland Browns practice facility.
Yes.
We have something coming next week, so be ready for that. But we're in Ohio. We're still on the road.
We talked to people at the voting booths. We actually went to the voting booths and we handed out $100 bills to everyone who voted for the things that we care about.
Well, what I did was I canvassed a bunch of different restaurants this morning, and I went to every server and just anybody in the service industry in general. And I told them that they better make sure to vote today.
Yeah.
And I will give them an extra 1% tip for every ballot that they cast.
Is it too late to do a town hall meeting? I always love those.
Yeah.
When these politicians come from up high, where they're sitting in their ivory castle, talk to the real people.
Mm-hmm.
Town hall meeting. Let's do it.
I don't think it's ever too late for that.
Yeah. All right. Let's talk about real stuff, though.
Sports.
Important stuff. The Cowboys stink.
Yeah.
And Jerry Jones is either dead or has no idea what's going on anymore. He actually has changed the narrative on everyone because he's so scared of firing Jason Garrett and not having full control of his team. So he, after the game, Monday Night Football game, said, Dak is still my quarterback.
Yeah. Well,
I was like, well, that's actually not the problem right now. Dak is not good, but Jason Garrett's the problem.
It's interesting that you went that direction with a take, because the note I made when I was watching the game is Jerry Jones is not making the calls anymore.
Mm.
I think he's a pup. He is a figurehead right now. He's the
so
emperor with no clothes.
Who is?
The guy that wipes his glasses
Steven,
off.
Steven Jones.
Steven Jones. It's been, he's taken over the kingdom from his father. It's like at the end of Braveheart where the old guy's dying.
Yeah.
And the son's making the calls.
Yeah.
So this is not Jerry Jones. Jerry Jones, he's either lost it or he's lost his own locker room. He's lost his own brain. Because like the Jerry Jones I know and love has like escorts up in his suite and he's banging
flip
them.
Phones. Have you noticed?
He's firing a coach every 6 months. He's like doing the thing where he looms on the sideline behind him during an
unacceptable
game. His wife
is in a different suite.
Yeah.
They always separate the suites. It's like, you know, a couple from the 1950s who have different beds.
Yeah.
He's like, well, you don't know what's going to happen in this suite, so why don't you stay over there?
Did you notice that in the background, he has like the behind-the-scenes feed of all the different camera angles in his suite? Not just the ESPN feed.
Either way, the Cowboys are a mess, and it is beautiful to watch. So credit to ESPN. I know the Monday Night Football crew has not been great. Jason Witten showed some robot tears. They like actually tried to get him to cry.
He pressed his eyeballs.
He touched his eye. It's like, all right, Jason, now touch your eye. All-time night, by the way, of Jason and Booger going after each other because Jason was home. And everyone was cheering for him. It was like, he didn't get to say the proper goodbye. So it was an emotional night it wasn't an emotional night. It was supposed to be an emotional night if Jason Witten was a real human being.
Right.
But
he'd been programmed to have tears.
Yeah. Yes. Credit to ESPN for doing just the last like 5 minutes of the game, a unbelievable montage of sad and frustrated Cowboy
fans.
Yeah,
that was great.
It was fantastic.
Yeah, and Jason Witten, he did show a little bit of emotion in the second half. The trick to getting Jason Witten to show emotion is to make him believe that the Cowboys have been slighted in some way. And so there was like I think it was a hit on Mariota where it was like helmet to helmet.
Yeah.
And they called it a penalty. He was like, that is just the biggest bunch of garbage I've ever seen. It's like, okay, now I see you, Jason.
Yeah.
Now I see what really grinds your gears.
Yeah,
I kind of like it.
Anymore.
I like it when you're angry, Jason.
Yeah. The
yell at me.
The other thing that the media does with the Cowboys. the other thing the media does with the Cowboys, because they want the Cowboys to be included as late as possible. The narrative today is basically 9-7 can win the NFC, so the Cowboys aren't out of it. It's like, no, I watched that game. The Cowboys fucking stink, and it's absolutely hilarious that they thought they were an Amari Cooper away from a Super Bowl.
I would like to give some thoughts and prayers to our close personal friend, Skip Bayless.
Mm-hmm.
He took last night's loss pretty hard. Like it seems like Skip he's held on longer than most to the fact that the Cowboys might be a good team.
Yes.
He still thinks that there's every year at the beginning of the year, he thinks that they're going to win the Super Bowl. He legitimately believes that.
Yes.
And that's what I love about Skip. And now it's like his whole world has come crashing down upon him. And like mommy and daddy didn't really love each other this whole time. And he's like, oh my God, he was throwing away his Dak Prescott jersey this morning.
Not only that.
He threw it into the trash.
Not only that, but Stephen A. Smith has been proven correct on all of his anti-Cowboy takes.
Yes.
So it's a double whammy and he can't debate him tomorrow about it. So Skip, we're thinking about you. It's a tough time. I know you'll get through it you'll get to watch LeBron. Maybe LeBron will get Luke Walton fired and you'll bounce back there.
Man, I really wish that LeBron, well, we'll get to this later, but, I really wish that LeBron was the one that tried to go for the 50 burger last night just to get, that would have been such a gift for Skip Bayless.
Yes.
LeBron, I mean,
selfish LeBron.
Here's the thing, LeBron, let me tell you something. The reason you make so much money is because of guys like Skip Bayless.
True.
That amplify and signal boost your name.
Yes.
Okay. True. So maybe throw him a bone and do something a little bit selfish tonight. Like, I don't know, have your daughter just like pass out drunk in a courtside seat.
Yeah.
With a bag of Franzia on her face, and then give him something to talk about.
Yeah, I like that. The other story we had from that game, Bill Belichick remains undefeated by making the right personnel moves because Malcolm Butler fucking stinks.
He's terrible.
He's awful. So bad.
He's been terrible.
This reminds me when I was in college. I remember Still one day I was walking down the street and I saw a couch on the street. I was like, oh fuck, nice, sweet. Like, this is a free couch. And I sat on it and I was like, all right, I'm gonna come back and get it. And as I was doing that, someone came to the door and they're like, hey, just a heads up, someone pissed all over that couch last night. And I was like, oh, okay, that's why the couch is on the street. That's uh-huh. Bill Belichick. When he cuts a guy or doesn't play a guy, he's basically throwing his furniture out and only fools will walk by and say, oh, sweet, free couch. Let me get this couch.
You know, it's weird that you say that because I did that one time. But I actually took the couch.
You peed on the couch?
I know. I have done that.
I laid on the couch outside and then they were like, hey, someone peed on that.
Yeah, I didn't. Well, it could have been peed on, unconfirmed. But I brought it into my house and then I sat down on it. And then I was like, this couch itches.
Yeah.
And I looked at it and it had bed bugs.
Yeah.
And so I immediately took it right outside.
You're the Titans.
So Belichick gave me bed Titans. Bugs.
You should not have signed Malcolm Butler.
Well, it's even worse because he duped over his own former player.
What's even worse is that he should be on the New Orleans Saints right now. And that defense would be a lot worse if Malcolm Butler was on it. So let's make sure that we credit. Oh, by the way, credit to us. Dez Bryant visited the Saints last night.
Ooh.
So we were only, 6 months early on reporting that?
Nice. Now we just need Michael Vick to go to the Vikings.
The Vikings,
right?
That's right. 2 years ago.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, but yeah, Malcolm Butler is really bad. Like, his hips just don't work anymore.
His hips don't lie.
No,
his
don't
hips move. Lie.
His hips don't lie. They don't move.
No, they lie.
They don't open.
They lie.
He can't
lie.
Open.
He can't release his hips.
His hips lie.
They do not lie anymore.
No, they lie.
They lie?
Yeah, because you would think that they're good. Like his
oh,
hips.
No, if you watch them, they're not. Yeah. Right. They don't lie.
His hips, they're not as liquid. They need to release
hips not lying is a good thing.
No, not November is a bad month for Malcolm Butler.
Yeah, but so hips lying. Oh, I see what you're saying. Got it. His hips, okay.
Like Shakira's hips don't lie.
All right, this is just a problem because I watch the All-22 and you don't. Got it. All right, so hips don't, his hips do lie.
His hips lie.
His hips
are
lie.
A liar.
Because he has them and his play would say otherwise.
Correct.
Got it. Also, Mike Vrabel, hell of a job with the Titans because that offense doesn't do so well, but they were doing some stuff like they were, you know, the shovel pass touchdown. That was nice. I love that. But the Titans are that team where sometimes it feels like they're playing their own game, not the game of football. They're playing their own game. How many plays can we run without scoring points?
Mm-hmm.
It's like, all right, can we get to 14 plays without getting into the end zone?
Yeah, they love 6 yard, 7 yard gains.
Yeah.
It's fun, though, watching Henry and Deion Lewis.
Mm-hmm.
So they're like the Aaron Judge and the Jose Altuve of the NFL, except they share a backfield. One's big, one's small.
Yeah.
They need a nickname. That's the only thing that they're missing right now.
The Thunder PMT and boys.
Oh,
Smash and Dash.
Smash and Dash. Thunder and Lightning.
There you go.
Shake and Bake. Deion, credit us.
Deion and Freon.
Do they have rookie coach, head coach of the year?
No.
Okay, well, Mike Vrabel's my rookie head coach of the year.
Okay,
well, so I'm just saying that's over right now. Actually, no, Matt Nagy, fuck. Mike Vrabel's my AFC rookie head coach of the year.
There are two of them.
There we go. It's the golden gloves.
Who
gold
else
gloves.
Is he going up to? So, John Gruden.
Yeah, yes, that's true. John Gruden.
John Gruden, who else is competing for that title?
It's John Gruden and
Greg Williams now.
Yes, Greg Williams, absolutely. People forget Greg Williams is now the head coach. I don't
in
know
this building.
Else.
He's probably here right now.
Yeah. Ooh.
Hey, Greg.
Be careful. Be careful.
So,
we should just what we should do is
bounty paper.
Well, I was going to say, we'll just take off my hat and just start throwing cash in it.
Yeah, just start.
And eventually he'll just show up and be like, you guys doing a bounty?
Mm-hmm. Cut off the head.
All right, let's do some hot seat cool throwing before we get to Cal Ripken Jr. PFT, why don't you start?
Okay, my hot seat.
I'm very concerned he's going to steal mine.
Ooh. Hank, why don't you start? Paper, scissors, shoot.
I'll just go
first. Rock, paper, scissors, shoot for it. One time.
Rocks, paper, scissors, shoot. Rocks, paper, scissors, shoot.
You say rocks.
Ooh, PFT one.
Hank goes rocks.
Yeah.
Hank's a plural guy.
Okay.
There's only one. My hot seat is Earth.
Mm.
Was that
really yours?
I knew he was
going to
do it.
All right. You know what's funny is I wasn't going to do that until Hank said that.
It was actually on my cool throne.
Okay, my hot seat's
more
Earth.
Creative brain than you.
Because the nerds at Harvard say that aliens might have visited
us. Oh, so actually I can do it.
A couple months ago.
It's my cool throne.
On a spaceship.
Okay.
That flew by. I guess it flew like really close to the sun. So Harvard thinks that it was aliens that visited us.
Hmm.
I'm not so sure that it was.
Couple months ago?
It wasn't visit. They sent a probe.
Yeah, they sent a probe. Well, Hank, this is my hot seat. You can explain when you get to yours. but it was just, if you see the pictures of it, it just looks like a giant rock that flew by the sun.
So it was a comet.
And so, well, this goes back to my
theory. Josh Allen was doing his pre-draft workouts That's around true. That time.
Yeah, so this goes back to my theory that NASA is just inventing cool shit to talk about so they can continue their funding, because right now they're going up against Space Force. But I would assume that, like, this would be something that Space Force would really get a lot of money thrown into their coffers for.
Right.
If you think that there's aliens that are actually checking us out. Yeah. This is why we have Space Force.
Okay.
Great invention. My other hot seat is my backpack. So the strap
broke. Very relatable.
Strap broke on my backpack. I don't know if anybody out there owns a backpack company, but it's tough. Like, I got all these takes to carry around. I got all this gear, and it's hard when you're on the road. And so I tied it.
The swag pack.
Yeah,
it's red.
Swag pack. It's bright red. I tied it off just like I was shooting up. It starts to loosen
PFTs
up a little bit.
You seem to have a lot of red stuff on election day.
Yeah, I do. Well, I'm not MAGA Hank. But I do have a lot of red stuff because it's the color of raising money for AIDS awareness. And I was very disappointed to see that.
Nice.
With the new Queen movie that came out with Freddie Mercury, they don't raise really any awareness.
Spoilers. Yeah.
So I'm trying to raise awareness about it.
Okay.
Yeah, okay. Please. So sorry for saving lives.
All right. What's your
my cool throne? Well, let's see. I did have Bill Belichick, but we already got to that. So instead, my cool throne is going to be keeping beers outside. So we're back in the best time of year.
Yep.
Well, it's actually the worst time because it gets dark at like 4:30.
Yes.
And you wake up and it's shitty. But the one silver lining is you can keep your beers outside now and it stays cold.
Yeah.
Nature's Icebox is open for business.
I like that. Yeah. That's absolutely the best when you just pop a few beers. Well, none of us have porches because we live in New York City, a shithole. But if you did have a porch.
I've got a fire escape.
Okay. There you go.
The rats will get to it.
Yeah. But still.
It's
cool.
There'll be drunk rats walking around.
Yeah.
And that's fun to watch.
Yeah.
My hot seat is anyone who's ever taken an Uber ever.
Go on.
I don't know if you guys saw this, but Uber driver filmed the Senators players. A bunch of guys were in the Uber together, and he filmed them without them really like knowing he was. Or like he films them. I guess they do it for security purposes in case anything happened.
Yeah, this.
But
seems
nothing
bullshit.
Happened.
Yeah.
Nothing happened. They didn't do anything wrong. They didn't commit any violations. And the Uber driver took the tape where all the players are like talking shit about their teammates, players, just guy stuff, locker room talk for the most part. It wasn't like Ryan Whitney, our correspondent, basically said that everyone that's ever played hockey does the same shit. But he put it out like
act like assholes.
So wait, sold it to TMZ. Ryan Whitney's been like he's talked shit about us before.
Yeah,
yeah.
Got
that's
it.
Right. He's getting out in front of that story. Mm-hmm. It's just a rough couple months to be a senator, you know?
Yeah.
Like people are yelling at you in restaurants, they're videotaping you in Ubers. They're the new most persecuted class of people is United States Congressmen.
Absolutely true. So wait, what's the fallout on this? Was there anything like
I don't know if there's been any discipline to the players, but it's obviously it's got to be awkward the next day.
You think? Very awkward.
Big time.
So never say anything in an Uber ever again. That's the lesson.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Don't take
I think
Ubers
that's
like
fair.
Me.
Yeah. That's bullshit though. You should have to sign a consent form for being filmed in an Uber.
I agree with that. Yeah, well, it's one of those situations where they have the sign on the outside that said, like, it's like you're going into a reality show when you walk into an Uber. Which, by the way, stay woke. Uber's been losing a lot of money recently. Market share to Lyft, different cab apps coming out.
That kicked me out.
Yeah, this might be just like a new rev share model for Uber. Is like they're getting into the line of business of creating viral content.
Well, what about that already exists, though? Remember the
Taxi
the
Cab
porn
Confessions?
Series? No, the porn series where they fucked in the back of the cab. That was awesome.
Bang Bus.
Yeah, no, not Bang Bus. It's a spinoff.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, they just fuck in the back of cabs. It's awesome.
But
it's the big cabs that are weird, and they're like minivans, but there's no middle seat, so you have a lot of room to fuck.
Wheelchair accessible.
Yeah, exactly.
I like that. Anybody can fuck.
But the people fucking are not in wheelchairs.
But they could be. That's the whole point.
There's enough room for them to be in a wheelchair if they wanted to be.
But what I'm saying is, like, Uber is now, they saw how great Taxi Cab Confessions did on HBO back in the day. And so now they're just getting into that line of work.
I like
diversifying their business model.
Yeah.
Every company should dabble a little bit in porn.
Yeah. In illegal recording.
Yes.
Yes.
And then my cool throne, it was aliens. PFT stole that from me.
Oh, damn.
But my other cool throne is people who don't know what to buy their friends and family for Christmas.
Mm.
You're on the cool throne because we are putting out ugly sweaters as of today.
Ooh.
So you don't have to worry about it getting there in time. It's going to get there today in time. This is an unveiling.
Oh, we've never seen this.
Ugly sweater.
Oh,
hey.
Fuck yes.
Let's
hey,
see.
Hey guys, buy this sweater.
That's a Big Ben walking boot.
That's
ugly
awesome.
Sweater.
Incredible.
football guys with Larry the Goldfish.
We got a Sheesh Wine shirt, a Sori shirt, a
Coach O Christmas sweater.
Larry the Goldfish, yeah. That looks good.
These are awesome.
Hey,
okay.
Ben.
So everyone check out.
Hey, Ben, I'll fit right under your tree. Just as pretty as you please.
Hey, Ben, I thought you said you got skinny. Why'd you only get a double XL?
So those are going on sale today. You can buy yours today. It's guaranteed to get there by Christmas if you order it this week.
Let's go.
Hey, speaking of ugly sweaters.
Plenty of time.
How about Patrick Ewing?
What about him?
He's ugly and he sweats a lot.
Oh, nice.
Wow.
That was really mean.
Speaking of ugly, that was very ugly.
Didn't we talk about the other day, like, don't start bashing players like 10 years later? Like,
no, he's a coach now.
Yeah, I know. He doesn't sweat as much when he's a coach.
He's in a position of authority. Wait, okay. Have you ever seen Buzz Williams?
Yeah, oh, yeah. That's Buzz Williams.
Yeah, big sweat. If you don't think that Patrick
doesn't move a lot.
If you don't think Patrick's going to be going through a few dress shirts per game.
He doesn't move a lot. He just sits there.
Patrick just
points his fingers.
Hit up Jose Bank.
Okay, my hot seats. I got two. The first is Stan Bowman, because I have to mention this. The Blackhawks fired Joel Quenneville. They're the best coach they've ever had.
Q.
Is that true?
Yeah, it is. And Stan Bowman is left being like a little rat who won his Game of Thrones. Shout out Barstool Chief. He won a game. I don't watch the show, but he said it was like Game of Thrones. So I just assumed there was a power play. And it's always not. That was kind of funny. That was a pun, but
it wasn't that funny.
It was very funny. Put in a laugh track. Yeah. It's always funny watching like a power struggle in a front office and how it all shakes out. Because now, Stan Bowman, you're on the hot seat. If you get a guy fired, you better fix it fast. Otherwise, you're going
to
get fired.
Just hypothetically, maybe there might be one or two listeners to this show that don't know the complicated power dynamics of the Chicago Blackhawks front office.
Yeah.
Can you please explain to me what the hell is going on?
I said Stan Bowman's the GM, and he fired the coach.
Okay.
So now he bought himself some extra time, mm-hmm. which is ultimately going to bite him in the ass, too.
Right, because he's going to bring in a coach, and then there's going to be eventually like a power struggle there. And it's like, okay, you're the common denominator.
The roster's not like at a point where it's going to win.
Because the cap didn't go up.
Correct.
Okay.
Because the loon went down.
Yeah, fuck you, Canada.
Yeah, exactly. That's a little salary cap special for you there. Mm-hmm. Canada's money didn't go up. They signed Jonathan Toews, Patrick Kane, thinking the cap would go up. It never went up. Kind of fucked.
Because Canada's economy wasn't strong enough. And the loon deflated. Because
that Justin Trudeau guy.
Ever since they got rid of,
he's too hot to be a politician.
Yep.
Too hot.
Ever since they got rid of Scott Darling, they were headed for the dumps. Say.
Mm-hmm. And Patrick Sharp. Well, he retired. My other hot seat is Max Kellerman.
Okay.
Because Stephen A. Smith and Michael Irvin was the greatest television I've ever watched in my entire life.
Yep.
If you didn't see it, they were screaming at each other before on First Take before the Monday Night Football game. Max Kellerman was just sitting there silently thinking like, wow, I should say something. And then every time he said something, he's like, well, why the hell is that guy here?
Yeah.
Because these two other guys are wildly entertaining.
Listen, here's the thing. If you're sitting next to two guys that are screaming at each other and both need towels because they're screaming at each other so much and you're not sweating, you're the odd man out.
Mm-hmm.
And you are bringing that television show down.
Yes.
And the quality of entertainment is coming from the guy that has his own corner man. Michael Irvin is the only person that I've ever seen that had a cut man for being on First Take. And I don't know why the hell we haven't seen that before.
Yeah, well, people haven't worked as hard as he has.
Yeah.
I
want somebody.
Allegedly. Not alleged. Allegedly that time.
Yes.
Yes.
He lines everything up for himself.
That's what we're saying.
He's been lined up. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I would like to see a corner man, a cut man, with like a bucket that the guys could spit into on First Take, on Undisputed. Treat it like a boxing match.
Yeah.
That's what it is.
That's exactly what it is. My cool throne is people who enjoy real basketball. So college basketball is back.
And LaMelo Ball is going back to high school.
And LaMelo Ball is going back to high school. If you want to watch fundamentals, if you want to watch guys give their effort all the time, miss a bunch of threes that are actually shorter, closer to the rim, and games where the refs get to decide everything because there's only five fouls, college basketball is back. I do love college basketball.
But it does mean more to the guys out there.
Yeah, it does. And I also love this month of college basketball because you get the crazy gambling games where there'll be a game on an aircraft carrier. There'll be a game in a ballroom in, like, Barbados. There's a game in a small gym in Hawaii.
You've got coaches wearing Lays and Hawaiian shirts.
It's the best. It's the best. This is the best time. I mean, besides March, this is the best time to bet on college basketball because it's just, like, there's games at all hours. There are games everywhere. They're playing in different locations. It's so much fun to bet on, and I'm happy it's back. And it's Duke's year.
Big That's time, true.
Duke is going to win the national. Mark this down. Write this down. Post it. We'll replay this in the spring. Duke is going to win the national title. Guaranteed. Big Cat guarantee. There's nothing that will stop them.
Except for Kentucky.
Unless AOC gets injured.
Nothing that will stop them. Nothing, Hank. They will... Don't even play the season. What's the point?
You just love Duke so much. It's kind of annoying.
Yeah, I know. I'm a huge Duke guy.
Hank, are you a little bit pissed off that Big Cat swagger jacked your Duke Thunder?
No, he knows.
No, absolutely. Welcome aboard, yeah.
Oh, you guys are all
We're just fucking doing it. Yeah. Okay. Duke is,
I mean, he didn't go there, so it's kind of annoying, but like, I'll take him off.
Right, yeah. I just love Duke.
Yeah, he's a big time fair weather guy.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to Tom Crean in a Hawaiian shirt. I don't know if he's coaching in Hawaii at all,
probably not.
But in solidarity with the coaches who are coaching in Hawaii, I would like to see Tom Crean back wear a Hawaiian shirt.
Yes. All right, let's get to our interview with Cal Ripken Jr. Just a reminder, he actually likes us.
The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort, meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
Okay, here he is, Hall of Famer Cal Ripken.
Who likes us?
Junior. Okay, we now welcome on Iron Man, Hall of Famer Cal Ripken Jr. He is here in studio, in person. Thank you very much, Cal, for showing up. Appreciate it. You always, you know, you're a dependable guy, I'd say. Right?
I used to be dependable.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Well, we'll get into that. But before we do that, I wanted to talk quickly about your foundation, the Cal Ripken Senior Foundation, where you are building turf baseball fields across the country. Mm-hmm. You want to talk a little bit about that? That sounds awesome.
Sure. It's the easy part is when my dad died of lung cancer at 63, my brother Billy and I tried to figure out what was his legacy of his life. And his legacy of his life was helping kids. I mean, he helped kids get to the big leagues in the form of his job. But he also used baseball to go into these neighborhoods, did free clinics to get their attention and kind of match them up with mentors to give them a positive direction in life. So we created a foundation called the Cal Ripken Senior Foundation where we use just that. It's not a new idea because the magic of sports has been used in that fashion a lot. But we've had a lot of success. We've gone from a regional foundation where we're helping hundreds of kids to now a national foundation where we're helping last year I think we had an impact on 1.4 million.
That's awesome.
And one of the great things that we've done is build these fields. We've built 81, we call them youth development parks all around the country. You're sort of in the spirit of baseball, but it's a place to administer our programs in a safe environment. We discovered that many of these places didn't have those places to continue these programs, and we wanted to provide those. And we found that they've been pretty transformational because the synthetic fields are so nice. Sometimes they cost about $1.4 million to put these in, and the community embraces them. Then all of a sudden, it pushes the element away that can influence some of the kids, and it gives a protected, safe place for the kids to do it. So we're very proud of I never thought we'd be a national foundation.
Yeah.
But we're able to help a whole lot more kids as
a
result.
That's fantastic.
And it's a double threat because you get all those tires that would be sitting out in a junkyard. They get ground up and put in on the field turf.
Yeah.
So you're reducing plastic waste as well.
I never thought of
it
that way.
You can take credit for it. You're saving sea turtles.
Take credit for that, too.
I know that we used to build grass and dirt fields, and during the ribbon-cutting ceremonies, we'd cut it, and we'd all be happy and proud of it. Then if you come back about 6 months later, it turns back into
the ground screw. You didn't really get on top of it.
You need like a Forrest Gump guy who just does it as a hobby now that he's old and rich to go out there and cut it. Yeah.
So you thank you for joining us, by the way. And like I said, you are dependable. Are you saying you're not dependable anymore? You're the Iron Man.
Yeah, I don't have to live to that schedule anymore where you come to the ballpark 162 games and you play every day. I can make my own schedule now. So I guess I'm accountable to me.
Okay.
That's nice.
But I'm not showing up for work every single day.
So your record, the most consecutive games played in Major League Baseball history, and I think sports history, it has to be sports history because you guys play so many games. Do you think it's the most unbreakable record in all sports? Because I actually, I would say it's either that or Joe DiMaggio's hit record.
Yeah, I agree. My longest hitting streak was 16 games. And so to think somebody could go 56 games without going 0-for-4 is amazing to me. So, and I think the pressure of the consecutive games hitting streak, because of the media and coverage and the scrutiny, that creates more pressure. And so I think that's almost unattainable.
Yeah.
But I think it could happen. And I look at what I did, not necessarily as unbreakable because I did it.
Right.
And so if I can do it, I'm thinking, okay, why can't somebody else?
But it's a different game.
Yeah, they got guys taking breaks. They manage the innings. They manage their time played a little bit differently than they did in like, the 80s.
Taking over.
That's right,
yeah.
They have to take a Fortnite break because their eyes are strained from staring at the television. Yeah.
It is a new time. You're right. And they look at, maybe an everyday player is now 145 as opposed to 162. Mm-hmm, and I want to get the best 145 out of you that I can, and we'll manage the other game. So, I mean, I think you're right. And they almost seem like they can predict injury now. Mm-hmm. The medical advances have become to a point where you're looking at, your hamstring is getting ready to tweak. We better give you 2 or 3 days off, and then before it goes.
Do you think if you played in this day and age, you would take more breaks, or do you think you would try to power through it? I mean, because you're right. I think the medical stuff, I think there's a lot of data that's like, hey, look, you got to give your guys a rest every couple weeks. Would you fall in line with that, or would you be like, you know what, I'm going to keep playing?
I hope I wouldn't fall in line with that. I mean, I look back and say, okay, could I have been a better player if I took days off?
So that doubt did creep in every now and then.
Most people think of their career saying, okay, I wish I would have played more, and I wish I'd have taken it more seriously. Uh-huh. But I look back and go, God, maybe I should have taken some days off.
Right.
But I know that if I handpicked 10 days off a year, if I came into the ballpark and said, okay, I'm going to take this off, it would probably be when I'm struggling. It'd probably be when I was facing a pitcher that was very difficult for me to hit, and chances are I'm not going to hit him as well. Mm-hmm. I probably could have impacted my stats and my average. But I hope that I wouldn't succumb to that because it seems like that's a different approach. I think the 162 schedule can come down to one game whether you make the playoffs or not.
Mm-hmm.
And that one game can happen in April, May, June, July, or August. If you just look at it, it could happen anywhere. And I think that certain players have an intangible value that's not measurable, in the way that they're measuring everything nowadays.
I like this. This is get rid of the sabermetric nerds. Give us the intangibles.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it's like Eddie Murray was our fourth hitter.
Right.
He could be 0-for-50, and I don't think Eddie ever went 0-for-50. But if Eddie was not in our lineup, we felt like we didn't have a good lineup.
Mm-hmm.
He stabilized the whole lineup, and I hit in front of him, so I benefited a lot from that. And he always made the manager and the other team impacted on what he was going to do, whether you take his pitcher out or bring a bullpen in. He affected that manager's decision.
So were there ever any guys that would come up through the system that would obviously you were well-liked by your teammates. You'd have to be to stick around that long, I would imagine. Were there ever any guys that would come up that would be like, come on, Cal, just take a day off. Let me just crack the lineup one time.
We had a few guys that says, you're making us look bad. We all want to take off days, but then we don't feel like we can.
Ooh.
You're like a
perfect startup. Attendance.
You're like a startup in Silicon Valley where everyone works, 20 hours a day, and then it becomes the office culture, and mm-hmm. everyone gets burnt out.
So, I don't know if I got burnt out or not. there were times, but I always took that as sort of a joke in some ways. I always thought that your work ethic was always a positive mm-hmm. Impact on the team.
Not to brag, we haven't missed a podcast in like 2.5 years.
Yeah.
There you go.
Which is more impressive, you playing 2,000 whatever it is games, or us doing, 200 podcasts in a mm-hmm. row?
Well, my brother Billy has the gift of gab, and he's actually successful on MLB Network, and he's won an Emmy Award for his analysis, so he's big time.
Okay.
And did so you think he has the gift of gab, and it sounds like to me you guys have the gift of gab, so it would be much more difficult for me to talk that many times in a row.
There are days. There are days where we're like, man, I'm tired.
We got to hit the greeny coffee in the kitchen to get up for it. Yeah, it's tough. It's tough stuff.
It's game changing.
So any drug testing?
It's actually encouraged if you're a podcaster.
Can we actually look? I don't know how I'm going to phrase this, but PFT and I have been doing this podcast together for almost 3 years now. We've known each other for about 6, and when we didn't know each other, we had just met. The first time we ever met,
We were having a beer, and we had a lot of times where we had parallel thought, where people would say, oh, that tweet looks like, you know, PFT's tweet to me, and then vice versa. And when we were sitting there having a beer, we both came up with the theory, why doesn't anyone talk about Cal Ripken with steroids? Not that you did him, because I know you didn't. But it just would be a fun thing to bring up. So I want to apologize.
I wouldn't
for that.
Think that's a fun thing
yeah,
to bring up.
It's not fun
up.
For
it's
you.
Not fun.
It's not fun.
But Big Cat was apologizing for it.
It was apologizing.
Yeah. Oh, I got
for
you.
Us even ever having that thought.
That. Right. It's like a dumb thought. It's more just that, like, haha, like no one's thinking about it.
Yeah, that makes sense. And yeah. I guess for someone that's been in it, it kind of bothers me that when they look back, said it was the steroid era.
Right.
And then therefore it kind of takes away your accomplishments during that time frame. Or... And comparatively, your numbers compared to someone else's numbers that might have achieved it not the same way.
Yeah.
It makes a light of your accomplishments. So it's always bugged me a little bit. The problem is no one knows the whole story. You know, no one knows when or if they've done it or not.
Yeah.
But makes me feel bad when you think that people look at the sport
yeah.
and think that a large percentage of them was doing it.
Did you ever have a moment where you kind of either knew something was going on with some of your teammates or maybe some of the guys you were playing with? You know, one guy comes back the next season and he's, you know, 50 pounds heavier and he looks like he can bench press 3,000 pounds. Any moments like that where you're like, huh, this is kind of weird. Something's going on.
Looking back with the benefit of hindsight, there were a few times when you look at it and you question, you know how hard you worked out in the offseason. I mean, right. I built a gym in my house. I lived in the gym in my house. I tried to make gains, and you made some gains. And then there were players that you looked at and you went, wait a minute, he's totally different than he was last year. And so you would be suspicious, but no one really knew.
Right.
It's not what sometimes it's being portrayed is that it was out in the open right in the middle of the clubhouse.
Being passed
right.
around.
Jose Canseco saying, like, if you slapped a guy on the butt, you knew that he'd have, like, a pin mark on there.
Yeah.
I didn't hear that one.
Did you read Jose's book?
Well, I did not.
Jose tells a tall tale.
I read Jose's book when it came out, and it was filled with spelling errors. It was insane. I don't know how it got published, but it was filled with spelling errors, and he has a strong dislike for you. I don't know if you knew that about
for
Jose.
Me?
Yeah, because he saw you as being like the guy who was like, you know, the spotlight was on you.
Well,
you
played the right way.
You played the right way, and then meanwhile, Jose, for some reason, was treated like a pariah out in Oakland.
Yeah, right.
Like, for some reason, he was looked at as the dirty guy with, you know, maybe it's because you and your brother didn't beat up anybody in South Beach like three times a year like him and Ozzy did.
Mm-hmm. I just remember there was one quote in his book that somebody brought to me at one point that said that I answer questions as if I'd have to get a focus group to find out what I should say and then say it.
Yeah, that's usually what an asshole
you
just
mean,
says.
So I felt good.
It means like you just have common sense.
Good. Yeah. I felt good that was put in the book, actually.
You're so polite.
Do you think that what about steroid users, known steroid users being in the Hall of Fame?
Well, that's a big issue that's coming up again. The voters, and I guess I'm glad I'm not a voter in some ways because you have to determine what's real and what's not real.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
What numbers are compiled and what they aren't. And without the full knowledge of the story, how do you make that judgment?
Right.
But I think anybody that has that shadow over their head, people have to be skeptical.
Yeah.
I don't know what the answer is, but I know that that's a bigger issue. I know Joe Morgan wrote a letter, pretty compelled letter, last year to the editor or kind of making an appeal that it's not okay to put known guys in the, in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
And so we'll see what happens.
Yeah.
I want to jump back real quick to the streak, something that you probably don't talk about that much is your consecutive games played streak. But there was one day that you almost missed a game, and that was when you had – it was the birth of your son?
Yeah.
But it happened to happen, like, on an off day, just, like, very coincidentally. And now I'm curious what would happen if that was on a game day.
Mm.
In retrospect, would you have missed a game?
I deliver a speech where I fudge that story a little bit to make a point in a speech.
Fake news.
And so – well, not really. But the I remember the streak. There was a lot of critics on the streak, especially in between about 1,200 games and 1,800 games. And every time I'd be in a slump, somebody would say that I'm being selfish and I couldn't play and all that kind of stuff.
Yep.
And I remember feeling that way. But once it got close to the record, all my critics turned positive again. And they were all saying, the Cal's got to break this record no matter what. Mm-hmm. You know. And at the time... my wife was pregnant with my second child, which was my son. My first child, Rachel, was born in the off season in November. So it's perfect time to have a child.
Yep.
My second son was born middle of July. And that probably is the worst time for your baseball player to have a child. Ryan was really big. He was nine pounds plus, nine six or nine eight or something, and he was still 2 weeks early. And so they thought that it was dangerous to have him in there. So the doctor wanted to have a C-section, and it just so happened that the timing was such where you could schedule the C-section on a off day in between Minnesota and Toronto.
It was like during the All-Star break.
So I flew home for the birth of my son, which was really cool. Okay. I spent the day with him. The next day I flew on to Toronto. And as luck would have it, I hit a three-run homer in the ninth inning to put his head.
There you go. Okay. And you also had the moment in the All-Star game where you broke your nose, right? That was another moment.
You've been doing way too much reading on
but
me.
But you just like someone broke your nose during pictures, right?
Yeah.
And that was another like.
So it's an embarrassing sort of moment, but yeah, we all stood up on these big platforms, and after the picture was over, you're walking down on the platform. I was in the back row. Roberto Hernandez was still in the back row, and so I was walking down from there. He stepped on the platform that teetered a little bit, and he thought he was going to fall. So he threw his fist back, you know, to catch his balance, you know, because all of a sudden it surprised him, and I happened to be standing right behind him. So he back-fisted me in the nose. It pushed my nose across my face, and it was stuck that way. And it hurt, and the trainer ended up pushing it back in. I heard a loud pop,
yeah,
but it didn't go all the way back in. So I played in the game, and because you don't play with your nose,
yeah.
As long as I could see, I'd be all right. So I played, and then
went
back to the rest of the season. I'll keep going. The second half started. My nose was still out of whack, so I played a Sunday day game in Baltimore, and I scheduled a time with the ear, nose, and a throat doctor that could go in there and pull it out. So it felt like they put some sort of thing in my nose that pulled it straight out, clicked it back in, loud pop, and mm-hmm. I was all right.
I mean, so you had to get it rebroken.
Yeah, pretty much.
Same thing happened to me. The sound that it makes after it's already healed for like a week is not something you ever forget.
Yeah, because I said, is that my nose? Because it was a loud sound, but it was good.
Mm-hmm. I mean, if your streak had been broken by that story, it almost would have been.
It would have been worth it.
I mean, you know, it would have been hilarious.
The funny part and the ridiculous part to me is the word spread around Philadelphia really quickly, and the thing, and I had to go into the interview room and do a interview because I broke my nose on a team picture.
Mm-hmm. That's fantastic. The answer to questions for that.
So during the course of your career, and actually during the streak, you had to deal with a strike with the labor negotiation. Mm-hmm. What was that like dealing not only with the fans? Because I feel like at the time there were a lot of fans that were putting it all on the baseball players. It was like mm-hmm. the first big labor strife that we've had in that generation, at least. So you got fans putting it all on you, and then you're dealing with, you know, the media. You're dealing with the replacement players as well. And the owners. What was that period like for you?
Yeah, that was interesting because, yes, the collective bargaining process at that time, when I first came in, matter of fact, I came to the big leagues after the strike was over in 81. So they expanded the rosters by two, and that was my entry into the big leagues. And so at different times when the collective bargaining agreement came due, there were strikes, threats of strikes and lockouts and those sort of things, but kind of small. But then in the 94 season, the players went on strike August 12th or something like that. And then the World Series was canceled. So you're going into the 95 season, and they were talking about using replacement players. Mm-hmm. So we walked out on strike. The owners locked us out of spring training. And they were going to talk about moving forward with replacement players. And that was when the issue of our owner said, wait a minute, I'm not going to participate in that because if there's replacement players, it will technically be a game and Cal's streak will be over. Mm-hmm. That's not fair. So Mr. Angelos and the Angelos family really stood up for me. But the issue was pretty simple. If that was going to happen and it was supposed to happen, it's meant to be. And I wasn't playing for the sake of the record anyway. So right. I said, I'm not crossing over. And even the Players Association voted to allow me to cross over.
Yeah.
If I wanted to. And I always thought it was a little bit comical. That, you know, you're a big league player. This is the circumstances you're playing in. This is the way it is, and this is the way it is, and that's the way it was meant to be. So it never really bothered me that much. But I really did appreciate the Angelos family and the Players Association thinking that much of me to do that.
Yeah.
Was there a part of you during that when, you know, some of the fans would pin most of the blame on the players? Were you like, hey, these are billionaires. And it's not like the contracts are what they are now. Were you like, why are you?
They were still pretty good.
Yeah, they were still okay for the time. But was there a party that was like, why are you taking this out on us?
Well, I mean, I always thought the fans were the victims. And so, I mean, you have a...
thank you.
I like that. I agree. Yeah. We pay your salary.
Thank you.
But you had an issue back and forth. The fans had nothing to do with it. And there's an issue between how are you going to go along, how are you going to play the game. And in the beginning, there were rights that the players didn't have, whether it was conditions of play or whether it was whether any freedom of movement, you know, all those things. So there were things that needed to be... negotiated. But then after a while, it just seemed like, you know, two rich groups arguing with each other and one trying to break the other. And the fans were the ones that were left out.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think it's a really smart thing if you're able to negotiate the business of baseball behind closed doors and get that done and not bring it to the to the public. You're preserving your game. And I think for the most part, there hasn't been any labor issues for a long time in baseball, which I think has been good.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I hope it continues.
Yeah. Absolutely. So you, Hall of Fame career, you played on some very good teams, but I have to ask you a question because I'm always fascinated with this. 1988, 0-21 to start the season.
That wasn't a memorable season.
Yeah. What is the mentality of a team that is 0-20? Is there like a, was it at the 10th game, you did the rah-rah speech, let's win one, and then at the 15th game, you're like, let's double down on the rah-rah speech? Like, how does that kind of snowball? I'm just fascinated by, you know, streaks of perfection, streaks of imperfection.
Sure. So it is kind of interesting, though. So I was involved in that negative streak. Now, it was negative and personal to me, and I think the set of circumstances might have contributed to the fact that we lost 21 games in a row. So the first six games, my dad's the manager.
Also, if you lose 21 games in a row in the middle of August, it's a story, but it's not the same story as starting the season.
When you start 21. The season... you know, so anytime somebody starts a season now in any sport and they start to get to a point where it's significant, then our names get brought up all the time and the comparison.
Like,
and
like
that's
the reverse Mercury Morris.
That we don't want to relive. But but I will tell you, going through the first six games, we're 0-6. And so my dad was the manager and they fired him. And I think, and Frank Robinson came down and on the same speech when I'm out there trying to be entertaining, I'll say, you know, so we all got together as a team and decided to lose 15 more just to prove that it wasn't my dad's fault.
Right.
But that certainly didn't happen. But I think that it turned us upside down. You know, and all of a sudden everybody was, I know I was mad because it's my dad. And my brother Billy was on the team. And we were competitive in the first six games. And then all of a sudden things just started to go haywire. Mm-hmm. Whatever bad could happen in the middle happened. And it was difficult to kind of get that back. And so we did go through it. And I would look back and say, now that I'm thankful that I did, because it was probably the worst experience of your life. Felt like the world was against you and you had to figure out how to be better supportive of your teammates and get through that. So in any experience you have in life, if you've proved that you can get through it, mm-hmm. then you can apply that to any other challenges in life. So I always look back on it as a positive in my life, but it was unfair to my dad.
Yeah.
My dad waited in line. Wanted to be the manager, was passed over when Earl retired. Earl came back, didn't have the magic, and then all of a sudden they give him the chance when we didn't have a very good team.
Right.
And there were also some points in your career when you get into a personal slump. You were notorious for changing your batting stance. I remember watching you when I was growing up, and like, you know, every other game it would seem like sometimes you come up there with the bat like horizontal, you have the bat like way over your head. Was that more of a mental thing for you to get out of a slump, or was that, you know, you'd see something on film and you'd say, okay, to make a minor adjustment in my swing, I'm going to have the bat, you know, touching the ground when I start to swing.
It was more of a physical thing than a mental thing. But I guess I would equate this if you're taking a golf lesson and they try to show you a video of how you should swing. Some people learn that way visually, you know, and you have to show them. To me, it was more I had to feel what it felt like inside. There's a term for that, but I don't really know what it is. So when I was struggling, sometimes you go out in batting practice. When you play every day, it just doesn't happen for you every day. You come out in batting practice, and all of a sudden you can't hit the batting practice pitcher. And you're thinking, he's throwing 60 miles an hour. Why can't I just hit line drives one after another? So something fundamentally is wrong with your swing. So if I was throwing my front shoulder open, if I was opening up too soon, then in the batting practice I would try something. You know, I would close it off, and then I would close it off more, and I'd see how that feels. And all of a sudden, somehow, your line drives would start happening again. Uh-huh. And you go, okay, that feels pretty good. Let me take that into the game. So I would try to take a fundamental flaw and then go to the other extreme and then try to work back from that. Yeah, so you either close yourself up so darn much and you look really ridiculous doing it, but if it worked, then I would stay with it. And the same way with spreading out your stance.
Uh-huh.
I had a stance that that people laughed at the most was called violin. And
the shake weight. You were doing the shake weight right there.
Exactly. And I was going back and forth because
we'll have some fun editing that one.
Yeah.
And okay. I got all these cameras. I keep forgetting I'm on camera right now. But once you start to click, then you start to ride it out. And I generally didn't care. If I'm teaching a kid, I will say the stance is only your starting position. Now, if you do too many extreme things in your stance, mm-hmm. you never get to the fundamental when the guy is right here ready to throw.
Yeah.
But I think if you looked at split screen or you look at a screen when the pitcher was here, mm-hmm. you would find that my approach was similar no matter what how I started.
So from the release of the ball, you were essentially doing the same swing. It was just how you got from the start to that point.
Yeah. That's
exactly right.
Is there any stance that you look back on and you're like, that one was actually really funny? I'll tell you my favorite was when your hands were like behind your body and the bat was just horizontal.
Straight. Yeah.
That was a good one.
Well, I mean, Mickey Tettleton sort of adopted that. Chuck Knobloch at some point adopted that sort of layback. But you know what that's a counter to? If you wrap your bat, so your bat's at this point, and then when you go to swing,
pitcher,
like Gary Sheffield,
yeah,
I don't know how he did that.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah. Then he brings the bat all the way back to an arc to get to this point. You got to be really strong, really fast, and your timing has to be pretty perfect. And I would get in the habit of wrapping the bat. So sometimes to tell me not to wrap the bat, I would go lay it
all
back.
All the way the other
lay
side.
Back, lay it back. And so I went the opposite direction. Then when you go from here, it comes up to your firing position, and then it works.
Okay. Yeah.
And so that was the logic of that. There was a hitter by the name of John Walkenfuss that played for Philadelphia.
Yeah, we're familiar.
And he had a really closed-in stance, which I felt the most ridiculous doing. But mm-hmm. it was actually working really well. I stood up, and I kept turning my leg further and further in and tried to turn as far as I could this way but still uh-huh. be able to see. And that was really effective. I started to get my power to right center field back. And the guys that threw extremely, extremely hard, for some reason, that worked against them. So that was the one I felt the most ridiculous in, but it worked.
If you played in today's era, they would have to do like weekly updates on MLB The Show just to update your new batting stance.
Yeah.
It'd be great.
Well, Billy, my brother Billy, an analyst at the MLB, when we do clinical work out there, he has a field day with me. He talks about the different stance and the different ways about it. And really his point is, can you name two hitters in the big leagues that hit exactly the same?
Yeah, true.
And you really can't. If you even start to think about it, you might find some similarities. But the point when you're teaching kids or coaches is that you have to embrace what their talent is, put some fundamentals to your talent.
Mm-hmm. I like that.
Yeah, so that's his point.
Yeah. What's your favorite unwritten rule in baseball?
Good question.
Thanks.
What is my favorite unwritten rule?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if I believe in the unwritten rules.
Oh, come on.
Give me an unwritten rule.
Like if your best player gets hit by a pitch, you got to hit them. No bunting on a perfect game or a no hitter.
Well, I disagree with that. I mean, if guys throwing a no hitter, you got to try to win the game somehow. And I think bunting is perfectly. You got to defend the bunt.
Yeah.
Hitting somebody else. I dislike that in many ways, because I always thought there are times when you need to send a message. If somebody is trying to intimidate and their pitcher's out of control, there are times when you need to retaliate.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not a pitch-for-pitch sort of thing. It's not if somebody accidentally gets hit, then you got to drill your next guy that comes up. Or if somebody hits a home run, you got to drill the next guy that comes up. And I think the manager should generally be in control of that. But too many times you get somebody that comes up that doesn't know, and he's pitching in the game, and then something happens, and he takes matters into his own hands. Mm-hmm. And then he starts drilling people. And then that's when normally the fights occur.
Yeah.
What about bat flipping?
I don't like that.
Ooh.
Okay, so that might be your
go on.
I don't know if that's an unwritten rule or not, but here's a thought. When I played, 100 million years ago, mm-hmm. You were considered more of a sportsman.
Mm.
Okay. So your entertainment value was in the quality of your sport and how you competed. Now, players would argue that it's a form of entertainment. So they look at themselves as entertainers and that, they're providing entertainment. And to this day and age, a lot of people like that. It plays on SportsCenter all the time. Everybody, will talk about it and they'll go back and forth. So in some ways it's a form of entertainment. But I always felt that And maybe it's John Riggins, like, if you score a touchdown, you know, act like you've been there before.
Hand the ball to the ref.
So if you hit a home run, act like that's normal. That's not abnormal.
But don't you think it's good for baseball? I mean, baseball's not struggling, but it's clearly, you know, it's a very regional sport. You root for your team. If your team's not in it, there's, you know, the ratings have not been all the way up there. Don't you think that kind of flair adds to it? I mean, Manny Machado, for a perfect example. He hot dogged. That was a nice eye roll because I agree with you. He hot dogged some plays in the World Series, blowing a bubble, you know, running down first baseline, stepping on people. Now, some of it's Bush League stuff, but it also is conversation and makes people want to watch.
Well, does that make it more entertaining to you?
Yeah. I mean,
you'd rather see that stuff.
No, I'd rather see good. I want to see good baseball, number one, but the extra stuff. Where you get the storylines and fans booing him and all this stuff, it's fun. It adds entertainment. Yeah. Well,
it seems like that's the kind of stuff that's focused on outside of the actual game. So I guess that's where I have a little problem.
Okay.
You know, if you hit a ball off the left field wall and you're still standing at home plate.
I like that.
And you got a single, that's a problem.
That's funny, though.
But that's a problem for your team.
But we're talking about it right now.
You should be on second base. That's embarrassing, and you might have crossed the game.
I assume you're happy that Manny is no longer an Oriole.
No, I'm not happy. No, I happen to like Manny.
Yeah,
I had a chance to get to know him. We drafted him number one.
Yep.
He came to our minor league team, the Aberdeen Ironbirds at the time. I got a chance to watch, and you could clearly see that he was too good for that league immediately. He moved through the system really quickly, and appreciating his talent, I always have, and I always wanted to watch how he could take his cannon arm and put it at shortstop. So I got a chance to see that. So I am a Manny fan, but I would not agree. You know, with standing at home plate and watching a ball.
Stepping on people.
Or if you did that intentionally, which I'm not 100% sure that he hit him intentionally.
Twice.
I think the second time. When it happens twice in one postseason.
So that's the problem with Manny is that when you collect all the things that have happened, then you can start to say, okay, you know, it's more than a pattern. That must be by intent.
He's got a wide left foot. That's his problem.
So anyway, it's hard for me to think that somebody would kick somebody going down to first base.
Yeah.
I can't condone that.
Counter argument. You pimped your streak, though. When you broke the record, you took a little lap around the ballpark.
Took a long lap. That was a long lap.
Hot dog did a little bit.
Begrudgedly. It was three attempts by them to push me out there to go. Bobby Bonilla and Rafael Palmeiro both said, you got to take a lap around. I said, I'm not taking a lap around here. We got to get the game started again. No, you got to take a lap around here. Finally, they pushed me down the line, and it felt like I had no choice.
You got to finish. Once you high-five six people, you got to do the whole ballpark.
It's an iconic moment, not only from that, but our producer, Liam, right here, he was actually born on that day.
Oh, cool. September 6, 1995?
Yep. Yeah.
Well done.
Pretty big. Pretty big deal. So what was more important that day? You breaking the streak or Liam being born?
Probably Liam being born.
Yeah, good call. Wow. Good answer.
That was bullshit. You know it was your streak. I say it's your streak.
It was interesting to be in that position. I was embarrassed at first to run down there. Mm-hmm. And then when you started shaking hands, you started looking at people. And that celebration that was 50,000 strong became personal.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then you started to know people that had been at the ballpark for all these years. I mean, God, I was there 15, 16 years by then.
But it's also one of those moments that if you're a sports fan and you watch all the sports, like, you know, I was 10 years old at the time, but I can close my eyes and I can see it. You know what I mean? There's certain moments that you, as a sports fan, you can close your eyes and you can remember it.
Do you remember Chris Berman being the announcer for that game?
I mean, I don't remember that, but I'm sure he did a great job.
Yeah.
They said one of the greater values of that time running around there was that he didn't say a word for 21 minutes.
Yeah.
or 22 minutes.
Boomer. Yeah,
you shut Boomer up. That's actually
– That is most impressive.
But Boomer decided to let it happen.
Yes. That's why I don't remember it.
Sometimes less words.
Yes.
Sometimes lets it happen.
That would have been great, though, to hear him come up with like nicknames for you. Ripken Van Winkle.
Yeah, just keep going.
I don't know. Yeah, stuff like that.
I like that.
Did you think that the Billy Ripken fuckface card was funny? Because I think it's really funny.
Very funny.
So we're not filtered on this show.
No,
it's a pod. Yeah, it's a pod. Yes. Who cares?
So it's funny is that many people made up stories that he was it was a practical joke, and then they got him pretty good. But the fact of the matter is he wrote it. I mean, he used to write things on the bottom of his knob of his bat so he could find the bat.
Right.
And because bats sit in a big barrel sometimes and you have numbers that all look the same, he would write expressions on it. And the expressions were innocent in the beginning, and then they started to get a little bit less innocent. And when he grabbed his bat and one of the card companies asked, hey, Billy, how about a shot for Fleer or Donruss or Topps? He put his bat on his shoulder and they took a picture, and it just so happened – that the what he wrote became visible to the card. Mm-hmm. So I guess we'll dispel any of these rumors. He wrote it.
Yeah.
I will say, though, he used to write in this thin Sharpie, not a thick Sharpie.
Interesting.
But when it was on the card, it seemed like it was thick.
It's very visible.
So I'm wondering if it was it might have been enhanced for the collectible.
Interesting. Interesting.
Oh, so you might want to research that.
You think the card company made it more visible so that they could retract the card and it would be worth
it? I don't know, but it might be worth looking into.
Yeah, you're very woke. I like that.
Interesting.
I like that, Cal.
All right, I got a couple last questions. You've written 30 books?
We had a number of kids' books, and okay. I don't know if 30 is the right number, but right. Quite a few.
So you think you're better than us?
No, I can't figure out.
That's a lot of books.
How many books have you written?
Zero.
Yeah.
Well, and then you should get moving.
I haven't read 30 books.
You should get moving. Sound like my brother Billy.
Yeah, I mean, that's you're trying to flex on us. Mm-hmm. Weird flex.
So we wrote, the kids' books are fun, always to write. We did a couple instructional books. They've been the funniest book types to me is, you know, we've had some success in business after baseball. And so then all of a sudden they think you're an expert in business. So you're writing books that makes an analogy of baseball and how you apply it to business.
Yeah.
And so a lot of times people communicate in that fashion. And so I only talk baseball. So we've written a book and now we have a second one that we're being asked to do that really is principles of sport and how they apply to business.
Okay. You should actually just become the most the most prolific author of all time. Just do it. Just break that record too.
Mm-hmm. I would like to be a John Grisham of sorts.
Yeah.
I'm sure that he makes a whole lot more money from his books than I make from mine.
Yeah.
Well, just write a bunch of movies. Yeah, write a bunch of books about lawyers and people just read them and assume everything's true.
Yeah, right.
Turn them into movies.
Option a couple. I don't know if you were going to do any of the people also.
I was.
Oh, you were? Okay.
Yeah.
I'll let you get to that because I just happened to see one when I was.
Yeah.
So the way that we prep for this interview is we look at your Wikipedia.
Yeah.
And so then we ask questions based off it. It's pretty rigorous.
You have a very weird people also. So on Google, you look and it says people also ask. So it's not us asking, it's other people asking. You have a very weird one. I'll ask you three of them. A couple of them are normal. The first one is, how old is Cal Ripken today? People are asking that.
Really? 58.
58, okay. And then some people are asking, how much is Cal Ripken's rookie card worth?
You know, I don't know. But recently I was at one of these memorabilia shows that you show up, and my AA card, which was a very rare card because it was the first one ever made, it sold for like $50,000 at that show.
Okay.
And so I was thinking, man, I might have 10 or 12 of those.
Yeah.
There you go.
Hell yeah. All right. And then this is the weird one. People are asking this. When did Cal Ripken Jr. die?
Ooh.
Yeah.
So was there another
Cal? Are you dead?
No.
Are
you a ghost?
Was there a second Cal that took over?
It's literally the Google search. It's like that movie. The fourth question is, when did Cal Ripken Jr. die?
You see that movie Dave where they had a second president that took over?
Yeah.
Did you have some guy that looked like you that took over like halfway through the street?
The real
I think we did a commercial like that at one point. I can't remember who it was for. That,
so you're alive.
I had an evil twin.
Tell me something that only the real Cal Ripken would know.
You know, you made me laugh a little bit on that question. Obviously, he's not. You can't answer that question. But Jose Mesa,
I could answer
the dead question.
Yeah, I'm alive.
Okay, I'm alive. But
I don't know about that.
But
I mean,
but Jose Mesa was a teammate of mine, and he used to always call me Cal Ripken Senior.
Oh,
you know, because I'd always ask him. I said, you know. There's no way that you're 26 or 25. I mean, you lied on your birth certificate. We'd go back and forth. Mm-hmm. And he would always counter with calling me Cal Ripken Sr.
Got it.
And so, you know, since I lost my dad about 19 years ago, it would be interesting how Mesa would look at that now.
Okay, so we'll have to talk to Jose Mesa. We'll confirm that story, and then we will confirm that you are, in fact, alive right now.
Okay, cool.
Done. Okay.
You brought up John Riggins a second ago, and he was a legend at the time. You know, when you were playing, you ever like go out partying with him? You ever go out, have a couple beverages?
Well, I'm sure I've drank a couple beers with him, but I that's just that you're when you're at a normal event. I know
when we won the World Series.
We won the World Series in '83. I think the Redskins won the Super Bowl in '83, and so they had a couple years in a row. I remember sitting in between Dave Butts and Joe Jacoby, mm-hmm. two big guys, 320-pound guys. Riggins was there as well. So they were celebrating, you know, their World Series championship in the off season when we were celebrating ours. So it put us in the same and in the same place many times. So, you know, to me, John is real. You know, he's a real football player, matter of fact, and kind of blunt and honest at the same time. So I always enjoyed being around him and talking to him.
Would he remember hanging out with you during that offseason? If I were to say, hey, John, you remember hanging out with Cal Ripken? Or is that just like a big blur for him?
Well, I think we'd have to define what hanging out is. You know, have I had conversations with him, or do we actually go out?
Would you say we're hanging out right now?
I think the length of this interview is that, yes,
we're hanging out. We're hanging out. Yeah, so I'm hanging out with Cal Ripken.
This is a visit.
Listen up, we've got some tea and you all are going to be obsessed. We spoke with the Abercrombie team and they told us that they were going to launch a wedding shop. Well, we lost it because, as you know, we are both getting ready to get Abercrombie and Hitched. The whole vibe of Abercrombie these days is clothes you'd wear for a perfect long weekend, and all their customers were like, hey, we spend long weekends traveling for weddings these days. And then Abercrombie was like, we love that. Let us just give you everything you could ever possibly want and love to wear for all things wedding. So they did. It has everything. Tons of dresses, jumpsuits, pants, swimsuits, pajamas, pantsuits, and all perfectly curated for different events, bachelorettes, brunches, showers, ceremonies as a guest and ceremonies as a bride, reception, and even honeymoon. It is incredible. Check out the Abercrombie Wedding Shop on Abercrombie.com. Go shop it now.
This question's actually not a question. It's just called, wow, that was a hell of a year. So Brady Anderson, 1996, hit 50 home runs. Wow, that was a hell of a year, wouldn't you say, Cal?
Wow, that was a hell of a year.
Yeah. That was a hell of a year.
Hell of a year.
That was a hell of a year.
Best shape of his life.
That was a hell of a year. There's nothing more you could say than that was a hell of a year.
It's a great year.
It's a great year. It was a great year. It was a great year. All right, Cal, thank you so much. How can people get involved with Cal Ripken Senior Foundation?
I mean, the easiest thing is just to Google Cal Ripken Senior Foundation, but the address is Cal Ripken foundation.org.
Okay, great.
Yeah. Let's build some fields.
I mean, it's awesome. I mean, baseball fields, kids playing baseball. There's nothing more American than that.
It is interesting. Is our foundation, which if I can say for a minute,
yeah,
we're not somebody that feels like we have to get all the credit for doing it. We care about kids. We try to use our position to benefit kids, and we partner with anybody that cares the same. And we've done many fields across. We don't have to put our name on the field. If you want to build a field, we'll put your name on the field.
Okay.
But in the end, it's all about how many kids can we help.
That's great. I love it. That's fantastic.
And you're investing in the future of the game because you're making kids better at sports.
Yeah. You should actually eat a little tip for your 81 fields now. 81?
Mm-hmm.
All right. We need to get a sign in front of every field. No bat flipping. Start them young.
Well done.
Yeah. No bat
like they
flipping.
Used to say,
I wish
no
I'd
pepper.
Have thought about that
bat
in field number one.
Just a big
and no pepper.
No pepper, no bat flipping.
Do you guys even know what pepper is?
I actually don't. Well, I know the game, but I've always wondered, why did it say no pepper on all these walls? Like, why couldn't you play pepper?
I mean, that would be a question like for Babe Ruth or Lou Gehrig, but I think I can answer that question.
Okay.
Many times, when you came, they didn't have the normal batting practices that we have now. I mean, you come to the ballpark, they didn't have batting cages and all that, so they had to get loose for the game in some way. Pepper was a controlled way to swing and to use the bat just to knock it back and forth. But when you played it in the same spot all the time, you would wear the grass out.
Yeah. Huh.
And so they would say no pepper, around the area from home plate. But you'd have to play pepper out in the outfield or on the thing. So pepper was a little game. But most kids don't understand what pepper
is.
Yeah,
yeah.
It takes a little back control, which it seems like there's not any back control in the big leagues right now.
Right.
Okay. Ooh,
bring back pepper.
Swing as hard as you can. Bring back pepper.
Play as much pepper as you want on the Cal Ripken Senior Foundation fields.
Love it. All right, Cal, thank you so much. Really appreciate it.
You're quite welcome. Thank you. Enjoyed it.
Good to meet you, man. That interview with our friend Cal Ripken was brought to you by Blue Apron. Junior, thank you, Hank.
You're welcome.
Hey, it's PFT here, talking about Peloton. Starting is everything when it comes to fitness. Peloton encourages you to get moving by doing what you can. Peloton helps you start no matter what level you're at. That's why they have instructors who motivate you from day one with thousands of classes from all levels to get you started. I love my Peloton. I'm back on the Buns of Anarchy. I've been back on the bike if you want to join Buns of Anarchy. Wherever you're starting, get moving with a Peloton bike or Bike Plus rental at www.onepeloton.com/bike/rentals. Terms apply. Hey, it's PFT here, talking about Peloton. Starting is everything when it comes to fitness. Peloton encourages you to get moving by doing what you can.
Peloton helps you start no matter what level you're at. That's why they have instructors who motivate you from day one with thousands of classes from all levels to get you started. I love my Peloton. I'm back on the Buns of Anarchy. I've been back on the bike if you want to join Buns of Anarchy. Wherever you're starting, get moving with a Peloton bike or bike plus rental at www.onepeloton.com/bike/rentals. Terms apply.
All right, let's get to some segments. You like that?
Yeah, Big Cat's getting into licking his thumb.
I'm
going
right to be a thumb licker. I'm a thumb
it's
licker
pretty,
now.
It's a pretty gross thing to get into.
No, you got to put the page up to the mic.
Yeah, oh, okay. Here, listen. Yep, that's a nice thumb. I decided I just wanted to be a thumb licking guy, and not even for page turning, just so that I always have a wet thumb in case I need it.
Yeah, well, Big Cat's
like,
decided.
Sometimes you're in a spot and someone's like, hey, anyone got a wet thumb for me? I'm like, here you go.
You know what it is.
It's already pre-wet.
You know what it is? You decide to stop touching your butthole with your pinky the other day.
No more dingles.
So now you're compensating
by
licking your thumb.
I lick my thumb.
Yeah.
I might start sucking my thumb again.
If I were you, I would start licking my pinky. And just like, well, you still can.
Nope. Texans not worried whatsoever. At all. Okay. Segments. What were you going to do for Jamal Murray? Or was someone going to do it in Hot Seat Cool Throw and we forgot?
Respect the Biz. I don't know what it's called. Respect the Game.
All right. We have Respect the Game and Respect the
Basketball
Biz.
Basketball gods are frowning on Jamal Murray.
Yes. So Respect the Game, Jamal Murray against the
Celtics
on Monday night. He tried to hit 50 points when they were up by like 10 at the end of the game by shooting a three. And everyone was mad, huh?
Well, by everyone, you mean Kyrie Irving.
Yeah.
He was the only one.
Well, I'm sure.
And the basketball gods.
And now the basketball gods are thundering down upon Jamal Murray. And he's not going to score 50 points ever this year.
Ooh, okay.
Because he tried that Mickey Mouse stunt.
It's like Ricky Davis. Yep. We never heard from Ricky Davis again after he tried to get a triple-double off of his own rebound, off of his own rim.
But that was pretty cool.
That was pretty cool. For anyone who doesn't know, the fact that Ricky Davis was a rebound away from a triple-double, ran towards his own basket, threw it off, and tried to count that as a rebound is still one of the sneaky, hilarious things that ever happened. It's
great. When I first started becoming a Celtics fan, Ricky Davis was like the guy.
Yeah.
People forget that he was like actually a premier player in the league.
I wouldn't say he was ever like premier.
Premier?
Well, for my
Premier's
youth,
tough.
It was
top
like
20.
Ricky Davis and Paul Pierce.
Top 20, yeah.
Big deal.
Yeah.
He was like the Jimmy Butler of the year 2005.
Yeah. Okay. So, don't worry, what's going to happen?
You know that
gonna...
that's kind of true.
No, it's definitely not true.
Okay.
It's not even close to true. Jamal Murray, does someone, like, what do you do, throw inside on him?
I know it's a different conference, so I don't even know if they play again this year. So they might not.
Yeah,
there might
not
be any retaliation.
Here's the deal. He's in Denver, right?
Who among us wouldn't do the same thing?
Oh, in a second.
Yes.
I'd be chucking. The Warriors did that when they were trying to get Clay the three-point record against the Bulls last week. They basically were just passing it to him and letting him shoot nonstop.
I actually blame Brad Stevens because letting somebody put a 50-burger on you is a bad look.
Mm-hmm.
So what Brad should have done, if he was thinking, was try to foul him. And make sure that he only got, like, you know, he wasn't able to attempt a shot.
Mm-hmm.
Or at least foul him in the one-on-one situation and just let him get to 49.
Yeah.
It does look bad if somebody's putting up 50 on you.
Oh, 50 burger's always bad. Mm-hmm. Never want to have
not,
a 50
not
burger.
A great sign for the Celtics this year.
50 burger.
Like, it does say something about team defense if one guy is able to do that against, like, five. They switched up guys guarding him last night, too. It wasn't just Kyrie. It was, like, Al Horford was on him for a while.
Uh-oh,
this was
Hank.
Bad.
He had a good night.
This is a bad sign. Like, I don't know.
He had a good night.
Hank, ball side defense makes us tough. Help side defense makes us a team.
Slap the floor. It's Duke's year. Come on, Hank.
Mm-hmm.
Brad Stevens, figure it out. We have a hurt or injured Triple H. So Triple H has a very bad injury to his breast. It is – I just got a text. Hey, Leonard, it's voting day, election day. Make sure your voice matters. Okay, so Leonard has been in trouble a lot recently. I've been getting his overtime. I'm getting texts about his overtime.
Yep.
Leonard's got to be careful. So Triple H has the darkest nipples besides me out there. He tore his bicep/chest muscle. I don't even know. And
that really sucks because those are the two muscles that like a guy can fake to look strong.
Yeah.
It's like bench press and arm curls.
Right. So he's now on the mend. Surgery. He said surgery in the AM makes you stronger. And we got to ask hurt or injured. Can wrestlers get hurt? Or are they always just injured?
So this is telling me that he's not doing enough steroids.
Mm.
Maybe he's off the juice.
Or maybe the steroids are starting to fail him.
Or maybe he did too many steroids and his muscles got too strong for his bones and tore like Nomar Garciaparra.
He was just in Saudi Arabia. Maybe he was some, you know, different
orb.
Steroids.
Maybe he touched the orb.
Yeah.
That's what happened. It's like if you see a guy,
get radiation poisoning from, mm-hmm. like, you know, I've seen it in movies at least, like a spy, because they were carrying around a briefcase with like a uranium core in it. Their arm starts
such
to
a
get,
relatable story.
Yeah, their arm starts to get scaly. I think maybe he was carrying the orb around in his armpit.
Because
it does look like a dye pack from a bank robbery just finished all over his chest.
Yeah, it's weird to see. I love when guys tweet out pictures of these type of gruesome injuries, because I just hope I never get to a point where I do enough athletic things to have an injury like that. It's like it just further, you know, proves that doing stuff is overrated, and just kind of chill out all the time, and you'll never have a blue and purple chest because you tore your pec muscle.
That's true. But you do have an injured back, but that you can't even get any content out of that.
Well,
which is tough.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just injured.
Yeah, you can't even take a picture of that, though.
You should get
an MRI and take a picture.
People are taking
of that.
Pictures of me laying down.
Yeah, that's true.
Or maybe I should get, you know what I'll do is I'll get surgery that I don't even need. And then complain about it for 2 years.
Yeah.
We have, last up, what was the, just stop talking Mike Tomlin.
Yes.
So what did Mike Tomlin
say? No, this is Just Stop Talking John Gruden, the Mike
Tomlin edition.
Yes. So
we've never been more right than we were with our Mike Tomlin take on Monday, basically saying every quote from him is just makes no sense.
Yeah.
But it makes enough sense that you walk away being like, oh, that was smart until.
I like that guy.
Yeah, it's like getting the five, what's the 5-point thing that stops your heart?
The five-finger
death thing. Grip. Yeah. Mike Tomlin does that to you, and you walk away. You're like, I'm fine. And then
you take three steps, and you start writing it up. And then you're like, wait a second. These words have never been put together.
Never.
So he said he was asked about the Carolina Panthers, who they're playing on Thursday Night Football, Color Rush edition in Pittsburgh.
So good.
He said they're a fundamentalist group. So, yeah. I agreed.
I mean, sure.
They're good.
Yeah.
So they're not Shiite.
Yeah. And I don't really know. This sounds okay. Fundamentalist. Yeah.
They're fundamentalist. You could say that Duke basketball is a Zionist group.
Yep. They take it down to the fundamentals.
Yes.
That's just all they do.
Yeah.
Mike Tomlin.
It does sound good, though.
It sounds great.
It sounds great. I think one time he was talking about Le'Veon Bell, and he's like, Le'Veon wasn't on his details today. And I was like, Le'Veon Bell sucked today. And then I thought about it. I was like, wait a second. What does on your details mean?
We're going to get a lot of Mike Tomlin quotes coming up. Coming back.
Yeah.
What is the latest with Le'Veon?
He left Miami.
He left Miami.
But is he driving to Pittsburgh? Like, I feel like he tweeted, I left Miami. And then we haven't heard anything about him getting to Pittsburgh.
Well, people just assumed he was going to Pittsburgh.
He's just leaving Miami.
He said farewell to Miami.
Interesting.
So that doesn't even mean that he's leaving.
That's what I'm saying.
He could just be like, Miami, you keep doing you.
He's actually just going to Fort Lauderdale.
Yeah.
It wasn't that big of a deal.
Yeah, so who knows? He might be back. He's giving up like $7 million a week. I don't know what it is. It's just a ton of
money. Not a week. It's like $1 million a week.
But he's screwed himself over because he can now get transition tagged by the Steelers, which means that they can just keep him around for another year.
Free agency is a spectrum.
And pay him less.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. The Le'Veon Bell thing, I feel like someone just needs to remind us every now and then, like, hey, Le'Veon Bell still hasn't signed.
He's approaching the line of scrimmage very patiently.
He's waiting back there, waiting to see everything.
Waiting to see that hole open up.
Hank, let's do it. Speaking of holes.
Guys on chicks.
Hey, boys, especially thick as fuck cat.
Oh.
That was one word.
We have been eating a lot of Taco Bell.
It's delicious.
Like a lot of
Taco Bell. It's worth it.
It's very delicious, but when we're on the road, it's a bad scene.
My boyfriend is doing No Nut November. Props to him. Does this mean I should do Dickless December?
Ooh, that's good.
That's like
spin it on him?
It's like the plot of the movie Chirac.
Yeah, spin it on him. Be like, oh, well, guess what? Now you don't get any in December. I like that.
Yeah, if I were to pick a month that I wouldn't have sex in, it would probably be December anyways.
Yeah.
Really fat after Thanksgiving. I'm just lethargic.
Just eating a lot.
Sports on all the time, like all the like shitty bowl games that I need to watch. So, also, I dare you to do No Dick December on me.
Dickless December.
I'll straight up chew that.
If you don't do Dickless December and you guys and your boyfriend starts having sex with you again, you make sure he disposes before November ends in December. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know what
Things could get messy.
Yeah. You know what I mean? Who the fuck? like no this is not a real is the thing. Dumbest thing ever.
Yeah,
it is the dumbest thing.
Well, bite your tongue.
Tell that to the ancient Greeks, big cat, who invented this and all their wisdom. They also invented logic.
For the record, when we asked people to tweet us, like, is anyone participating? I had one person say that another person was. So not one person came forward and said, "Yeah, I'm doing no November."
Oh, my timeline is flooded.
That's why I believe it is just existing in a Reddit thread somewhere where a bunch of dudes are like, "Guess what? We could have sex, but we're not in November."
Hank's
timeline is, like you said, a bunch of incels. So everybody that you follow, everyone on my timeline is getting laid right now.
You guys are weak. It's cool.
It's just a big giant orgy on the TL.
"Hey, PMT, especially Death. My husband doesn't want to cut the umbilical cord of our first baby. What's the best way to convince him that this is standard procedure?"
Like, he just wants the baby to be attached to her?
Tell him. Forever? Tell him it's good luck for all his sports teams. He'll do if you and you know do the you know when someone retweets something in your timeline, it's like if you don't retweet this in 10 seconds you'll have bad luck for the next 7 years and you always have to retweet it. Say that if you don't cut the umbilical cord, your teams will have bad luck for the next 7 years.
Or just tell them that if the longer the umbilical cord is attached after the baby's out of the womb, the more that baby is going to imprint itself on the mom. And so then it becomes a contest. Like, the baby's going to love the mom more the longer it stays there.
Yes.
Hey,
or
guys.
Just tell him it's high in protein.
Mm-hmm.
And so then he'll be like, okay, I can eat that, like with the placenta.
Yeah. Or be like, hey, are you Carson Wentz? Have you ever dreamed about cutting your own dick? Well, this is as close as you'll get.
Mm-hmm. Oh, actually, here's what
people
you really...
forget. Carson Wentz said he wanted to cut his own penis off.
That one might have been confusing if you didn't remember that tweet, but that was like draft night. He had that. Yeah,
and also
around.
Killed a lot of ducks.
Killed a shitload of ducks.
So many ducks were killed by Carson Wentz.
He's a serial killer of ducks.
At what point were they like, this is too many ducks?
I think after like a couple dozen, after 24, you're like, okay, this is
a lot of ducks.
I got all my ducks hammered into a wall.
How much duck can you eat?
Yeah, a lot. That's actually my favorite meat.
Yeah, it's
good. A bad example.
But it also is like, it's a treat, so you don't want to eat too much.
Mm-hmm. But back to the umbilical cord thing, just tell the husband that it's going to be an outie the longer you wait to cut it.
Mm-hmm.
And then he doesn't want to do that to his baby.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's true or not, but just lie to him.
Yeah.
Like you do about everything else, probably, because guys are dumb.
Whoa. Sup. Longtime fan here with a boyfriend that will only have sex with the lights off. Does this say more about me or him?
No, he's fat.
Also, go green.
Yeah, he's fat.
What is... Go green, as in like
Michigan State.
Oh, what it is? Or he's saving the environment.
No, I think it's Michigan State.
Green Party.
Yeah. No, he's saving the environment by not wasting electricity.
And he's fat.
So you know what? To him, the sexiest thing of all is a world that's going to exist in 100 years because he turned off the lights when he had sex.
Yeah, the thing that really turns him on is enough drinking water for the Earth's population.
Mm-hmm. So I guess he's just a little bit more evolved than you are.
Mm-hmm. And he's fat.
Yeah.
Probably keeps his shirt on, too.
All right, we're going to end with a woe.
He goes through the pajama hole?
Yeah.
The fly of the boxers?
Exactly.
So, do you think anybody's ever had sex in the last, like, 10 years through whitey-tighties, that, like, little maze that you have to get through?
Mm-hmm.
Jerry Jones.
Yeah.
Jerry Jones, definitely.
Jerry Jones,
good
for
point,
sure.
Hank.
Great point.
Yeah.
Sup, handsome Hank. Here's a big-time woe. You don't really wash your hands. They actually wash each other while you just watch.
That's good. That's good. Your hands are just washing each other.
Yeah, I'm trying to... But you're telling them to...
Are you?
Wash each other.
Who's
are
telling
they telling
them?
Me?
Yeah.
I don't know. One hand doesn't know what the other hand's doing.
One dog's looking this way, the other dog's looking that way.
Yeah,
guy's
this guy's
hey,
like,
what do you want from me? Man,
what's going on?
Yeah.
You know what that is saying?
No.
That's good.
You've never seen Goodfellas?
That's after they stab
You've
a guy
seen
Goodfellas, and have to
right?
wash
Goodfellas.
Their hands.
Don't make us ruin Goodfellas for you, too. Okay. That's our show. We'll see everyone Friday. Huge Thursday night football game. NFL picks. And yeah, that's it. No, we have a couple. We actually have a really good interview coming Friday.
Yes.
Yeah.
Hall of Famer?
With a friend.
Not a Hall of Famer. But
that's what you said last time.
Yeah,
so
not a Hall
of
Famer, but a very interesting interview.
Could be.
Yes. Could be a Hall of Famer.
I think this guy liked us too.
Yeah, exactly.
So
he's a Hall of
you're going to want
to
listen to that.
Actually, he probably isn't a Hall of Fame.
When did we start using the term Hall of Fame? Because it seems like that's just like, I would rather have a room. Like, a hall is kind of like chicken shit. Like, you walk through a hall,
rich
you're in, you're out.
Halls.
Yeah.
I'd rather have
if you're rich, you got a hall.
Give me
you got a big ass.
No, I know that, but like, I'd rather.
It's like the richest thing you can have.
I'd rather be honored with a room than with a hall.
No, but anyone can have a room. Hank's right. Like, if you get an apartment, you probably don't have any halls. You just have, like, a couple rooms.
Yeah, but
once you get a house, now you have halls.
If it's a hall, you have to, like, there are two holes. You have to go in. You have to go out.
Yeah, I know how. I know
yeah,
how.
Yeah, do
work.
You?
Yeah,
because it doesn't sound like you do. If you have a room, you go in, you visit for a while in the room.
Yeah, But I'd like to go in and
You can
out.
Get locked in a room of fame.
I'd like to go in, then go out, then go in again.
Can't get locked in a hall.
Okay.
Brace the bait. Halls are rooms.
Halls are rooms.
Love you guys.
Presented by Barstool Sports.